Buckle up. It's time for the Champions of Cinema podcast.
Welcome, sports fans, to the ultimate cinematic arena. I'm your host, Joe Walker, and this is the Champions of Cinema podcast. Fellow producer James Marshall and I are diving deep into the heart-pounding world of sports films. The victories, the defeats, and the unforgettable moments that make us cheer, cry, and believe in the power of the underdog. James.
Hello.
How are you doing, buddy?
I'm all right, man. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I'm just getting into my winter arc, as everybody says.
Oh, my God. Okay. So you're putting out the... You're going to be repping out on the bench in like a full three layers of tracksuits so you get that sweat, the sweat patches.
Yep. No, you like spray that. Those on. You spray those on before you go out.
Yeah, what have you been watching?
I haven't actually been watching much. I've been watching some movies, but nothing kind of special. But I have recently watched or started watching the new series Gone Fishing with Mortimer and Whitehouse, which is a mixture of two men in their late 50s, early 60s going fishing and comedically enjoying themselves. Yeah, so it's just a really nice series that's super chill and relaxing. It's always on a Sunday night. And now there's something like seven series of it. So it's something that you can always go back and watch again and again and enjoy. It's a really nice one. What about you?
I have been... I'm going back on some Grand Tour videos, actually. Yeah, I just wanted something... Just wanted something sort of chill in the background whilst I'm painting my little miniatures. So started off with Sand Job, then did Scandi Flick. Easy watches.
But this week we've got to talk about a new movie. Yeah. It's obviously we're sort of diving into season two. Mm-hmm. We're beginning a new arc of new movies. Mm-hmm. This one is connected to a previous movie that we've done. Do you know which movie that might be? Or do you remember what
it's
movie
like,
that might be?
It's like Chariot of Fire, because it's an Olympics movie?
No. No, so this was directed by Bennett Miller, who also directed Moneyball.
Yeah, it makes sense. Has like, yeah, has his kind of style there, like the use of that music and stuff.
This week, we are watching the 2014 movie Foxcatcher, a non-fiction movie about the lives of Dave and Mark Schultz and their interaction with John DuPont and the Foxcatcher wrestling team that he set up. And I'm not going to lie, James, this is a bit of a dark
one. Fucking really dark. Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the heaviest film we've done so far.
Yeah, I think. And so, if you're not having a good week, if you're having a bit of a bad time,
go watch this.
If your head is not in the place for a negative sports movie that feels quite sad at times and doesn't really have any redemption, don't watch Foxcatcher, and maybe don't listen to this episode in full.
Yeah,
no spoilers right now, but if you haven't seen it already, this is one where you don't really want to spoil it by listening to us talk
about it.
Yeah. You know, go away and watch it first and then come back and listen to us afterwards. Written by Eric Max Fry, who did the initial draft, and then finished off by Dan Futterman, who Miller worked with on Capote. He finished the script of this. The budget for production was $24 million. And I'll tell you how much it made at the end of the episode.
I think I know how much it made. It wasn't a lot.
Hollywood is probably once bitten, twice as shy with this. And actually, interestingly, Bennett Miller hasn't made a movie since it.
Wow.
I don't think the writers have written anything since it either. So, but before we get started, obviously, last spoiler warning. But James, can you give us your haiku for this episode, please?
Rich men hunt and scheme. Wrestlers toil in shattered dreams. Cold turns cold as steel.
Okay, yeah. I mean, as bleak a haiku as I think you've done so far.
I can't, yeah.
But if you want a bleak movie, you set it in Pennsylvania, don't you, James? That's what we've learned about life.
Oh, shit, yeah. How many times have we been in Pennsylvania now?
This is at least two.
But yeah, it doesn't matter. Like, doesn't matter if you're from poor ends of Pittsburgh or in a mansion in affluent mansion in Pennsylvania. It's still bleak. It's exactly the same. Yeah.
Yeah. But James, it's not going to be the last time that we come to the dark and grey, depressing skies of Pennsylvania. in our time, because we've got plenty of that to come in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of Pennsylvania
we
time.
We have a whole season of Pennsylvania.
Shh, James, don't tell people too much. Don't want to get them excited too early when they've got to then wait 8 weeks until we get started on that.
That's right, my bad.
Okay, so obviously we've changed the sort of way that we do these episodes. If you haven't listened to episode one of season two, we've moved our process on along a little bit. We're doing some things a little bit differently. And instead of going sort of deep dive scene by scene, mostly we're just going to do a three-act plot, talk about the movie and go through it. Generally, we try and be funny in these.
Try, emphasis.
But mine is not funny at all this week.
Yeah,
so fair. I think that's just in line with the movie. So yeah, let's get started on this. The film opens with a look at Olympic gold medalist Mark Schultz making ends meet by public speaking whilst living quite poorly in his athlete lifestyle. Contacted by billionaire eccentric John DuPont, invited to visit the Foxcatcher estate, and is offered the opportunity to coach the team there and encouraged to recruit his brother to coach as well. Unsuccessful in recruiting Dave, Mark throws himself into the work of coaching the Foxcatcher team whilst growing in closeness to DuPont and winning the national championship for the Foxcatcher teams.
At Foxcatcher, the relationship between Mark and DuPont becomes increasingly complex. DuPont showers Mark with praise and financial support, but begins exerting psychological control over him. Mark succumbs to DuPont's influence, engaging in unhealthy behavior like drug use. DuPont also wants to recruit David, believing that having the famous elder Schultz brother will further validate his program. However, Dave, a devoted family man, is initially reluctant. However, eventually Dave agrees to join the team, but maintains a healthy distance from DuPont's personal manipulations. As the team prepares the Olympic trials, tensions rise. Mark struggles under the weight of DuPont's expectations, while Dave tries to maintain peace. DuPont, craving recognition and respect from both the wrestling community and his own family, increasingly displays erratic, paranoid behavior.
At the Olympic team trials, Mark starts off poorly with a loss and hits a downward spiral of self-harm and eating. After an intervention by his brother Dave, he makes weight and wins his place on the Olympic team. John DuPont tries to intervene and leaves after learning that his mother has died. Back at Foxcatcher, the relationship between the brothers and DuPont is strained further. Mark wishes to leave and join BYU as the coach along with Dave, but Dave resolves to stay for the good of his family while securing some financial help from DuPont for Mark in the future. Dave continues to coach and live at the Foxcatcher estate, even whilst a more and more erratic DuPont looms like a shadow. In the January of 1996, after watching his self-funded Foxcatcher documentary, DuPont and his bodyguard drive to the home of Dave Schultz, where Dave was working on his car radio. After a short interaction, DuPont shot and killed Schultz, driving back to his estate, only to be apprehended by FBI agents 3 days later. The film closes with Mark winning his first and only UFC fight 4 months after his brother's death. James, this is fucking dark, man.
Yeah.
On multiple levels. On multiple levels. So not only is it dark because Mark is clearly living $25 for speaking to kids about his Olympic medal.
It's tragic.
And eating ramen and cheeseburgers. You can see why when a millionaire philanthropist, philatelist and an ornithologist comes along to, you know, give him some cash.
Sure.
And live in a nice home on a country estate that is almost like it's manna from the gods, right? It's like it's just been gifted to him.
I don't blame him for taking it at all. I don't think you could expect someone who treats you so well to end up being as they were. And you can imagine when you're in that situation where, can you imagine, like, I don't care what the era is, like, you're an Olympic athlete, a gold medal Olympic athlete, and you're living off of a couple packets of ramen a day, you know, and you're having to cash in $20 checks for speaking at schools. Like, that's about as low as it gets, really, for, you know, not like a former athlete, a current athlete. He's trying to, that's how he's trying to get by. I'm like, well, how, you know, if that's how it is, how is...
It just goes to show there's no money in wrestling. Right. You could be an amazing Olympic athlete, but there's no money in it. And even now, there's no money in coaching. The reality is, as soon as you take money for coaching, as soon as you get something that seems like it's too good to be true financially, it probably is. Mm-hmm. Interestingly, there's loads of stuff for us to talk about here when it comes to relationships, when it comes to the talking points. But first, I want to start with a quiz.
Ooh, yay. Okay.
And it's just a simple quiz for you today. And the question is, what Olympic gold medalist in wrestling and later WWE world champion trained at Foxcatcher in the mid-90s?
Kurt Angle. Serious?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And he wasn't at Foxcatcher
at the same time
the day that Dave Schultz died, but he rang Dave Schultz earlier that day to leave him and left him a message saying, hey, I'm coming up this week to train ahead of the 1996 Olympics.
Fuck. Wait, so wait, when? What year? What year was the... Was he shot then?
1996, January of 1996, yeah.
Oh, so like 8 years later, like long time after, okay.
So yeah, something that we don't necessarily see is the timeline of this movie, it's condensed in the movie.
Super condensed.
But in essence, 1986 is the year when Mark Schultz went to Foxcatcher. And 1988, before the Olympics in Seoul, mm-hmm. he left Foxcatcher. Dave joined Foxcatcher in 88 and went on to coach at Foxcatcher for 8 years because it was such a financially good decision for him.
Yeah, it was.
And his family.
I guess the wife was on board too, you know.
He said, how much are you going to make being the head coach there? And he said, I just thought of the biggest number I could think of. This is 1986. And he says, I said $25,000. Mm-hmm. I went and did a bit of quick maths and searching. Yeah, how much do you think that would be worth? $25,000 in 1986 would be worth today?
100?
Not quite, no. I mean, it's about $60,000 to $70,000 US.
God.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a great wage for a coach.
You're right. But like, I guess we when we think of like professional athletes, we're thinking of, you know,
Millions
yeah. eventually. Yeah.
We're going to get into the relationships about this. And I wanted to talk about coaching and mentors and athletes.
Sure.
And I think a great place for us to start would be to talk about probably what we would see as the main athlete in this movie as being
Mark Schultz, yeah.
Played by Channing Tatum. Okay. Have you got any insight into us about Tatum and his experience in making this movie or about Mark Schultz, even?
Okay, so Mark Schultz, born in October 26, 1960, grew up in a wrestling family, obviously, with his older brother, Dave Schultz, who was also an accomplished mm-hmm. wrestler. Despite their shared success mm-hmm. in the sport, Mark often felt overshadowed by his brother, who was a bit more charismatic mm-hmm. and popular in the wrestling community. We see bits okay. of that in the film. Mark gets a cheer from the audience, and Dave, who's at the wrestling bout, will sort of wave a little bit to the crowd, you know, as he's coming off the stage, and kind of gets a louder roar than Mark does, even though Mark was the one who just wrestled. There's not a sense that there's necessarily like a playing rivalry, but Dave seems to be the more popular one of the two. Mark was obviously a wrestler in the 80s. Competed in freestyle wrestling and won several national and international titles, including Olympic gold in 1984 in Los Angeles, World Championships in 1985, and also Pan American Games NCAA Championships as well at the University of Oklahoma. So succeeded at a variety of levels. And obviously we see he wins the world title in 87, got into the Olympics in 88. So while Mark achieved remarkable success on the mat, his accomplishments were often compared to Dave's, who was widely regarded as a more personable and media savvy figure, which we can see in the film creates a strong sense of insecurity and frustration for Mark, who always has this struggling feeling of inadequacy during the whole film.
Yeah, you're right about Dave. Obviously, he does come across as a real leader and a fantastic person, a family man. That he had, you know, focus on you know, making his athletes better. Whenever we see him coaching in the movie, he's technically really well minded, but he explains things fantastically. He explains the why.
He definitely has a coach's brain. You know, it's almost like 100%. The Greg Olsen of wrestling. I like to think of him as just being
interesting.
He's not necessarily. He doesn't strike you as completely ferocious. He doesn't have that kind of animalistic style that we see Mark have, played by Channing Tatum. Mark Ruffalo gives a much calmer demeanor, I'd say. It's much more between the eyes, thinking about his attention to detail when film, you know, knowing the tendencies of the athletes that Mark has to go up against, knowing that the certain tells and stuff. He treats wrestling more as a kind of a mental game as much as a physical one.
Absolutely. Although, in reading and doing research for the episode, we found that in the 84 Olympics, both Mark and Dave injured opponents that they wrestled against.
By foul play, or...?
Just by being violent. By just being really, really quick and violent. Okay. And they were just known as being quite brutal. And a bit of an insight into Dave Schultz is that Dave Schultz admired the wrestlers of the Soviet Union so much that he learned Russian so he could understand what their coaches were saying to them.
Wow. That's it. See, that's what I mean. That's like Brady level of obsessiveness.
This is the only movie I think we've seen so far where we get a dual coach relationship happening. And I'm air quoting coach when it comes to the second person we're going to talk about here.
Okay.
Because Johnny DuPont, played by Steve Carell, amazing performance, by the way, absolutely stunning performance. He wants to be a coach and mentor and longs to live in the role of power and respect that Dave Schultz sort of embodies.
Mm.
He is possibly one of the best villains I think ever put on film, but being portrayed by a real person, because it's like, it's just absolutely stunning.
I guess it's for me, you said this film is unlike one we've seen before. I'd say it's a bleed for this. I feel like you've got Paz and you've got his dad, who's like, I think the dad is like a bad sort of mentor. And then you have Kev Rooney. He's like the good coach, who's more like...
But not Dave. Not to the same level as this.
Yeah.
This is next level, James, when it comes
to... I'd say it's quite common that you have kind of... That's like another potential like sub-trope of having two mentors vying for control over a particular athlete.
Good coach, bad coach. Yeah. Maybe.
Johnny
DuPont, we're talking billionaire.
Oh, yeah.
He smacks of eccentric privilege and being able to have whatever he wants. I think Carell's performance in this is so far removed from any other performance that I can remember an actor has ever done, apart from possibly Robin Williams in Insomnia and One Hour Photo, when he did those two movies where he plays serial
killers. Like Steve Carell in the past, he plays a very similar character in a lot of the films. So we look at The Office, 40-Year-Old Virgin, Evan Almighty. It's these kind of goofy, you know, kind of warm, nice characters. But yeah, you're right. He's completely different. There's almost an element of derangement here. Like something's not working in his head. I think that
it's stunning.
The heavy prosthetics help a lot. Apparently, they had to actually make his nose smaller for this film because.
I think they worked on a few different noses.
Yeah, there's a lot, not just the nose, but like the brow area looks a bit different and stuff. Like it's odd, yeah.
But he wasn't the first choice for the role.
Oh.
Who do you think was Steve the first choice for the role?
No idea. I don't know. No, Mark. Mark, you gotta, you know, I want you to be my coach at Foxcatcher, you know.
The first choice was Gary Oldman.
Oh.
He wants to have Gary Oldman in, but he was busy doing some other stuff. Why it works so well is for people, because people will have gone, oh, Steve Carell. And then they watch it and they're like, oh my God, Steve Carell. I don't want to ever see him doing this ever again. A little bit of information about DuPont. Obviously, when the murder happened, or the killing happened, if you want to put it that way, he had been through some massive mental illness issues. So he'd been married and he accused his subsequent ex-wife of being a Russian spy and held a gun to her head and everything.
Oh.
After donating millions of dollars to Villanova University to start a wrestling team and appoint him as the head coach, he was accused of making sexual advances towards a student and fired as the head coach.
My God.
And apparently when he was younger, he had a horse riding accident that resulted in him having to have his testicles removed.
Oh my God.
So,
and you get the sense of, it's that classic kind of millionaire, like, power billionaire, like power sort of thing, where like they expect to get everything they want. They think you can just buy everything with money, right? It's like money's the answer to everything.
Yeah, how much? How much is always the question.
How much opens check, but how much is it? Like, they can buy anything they want.
Usually, in a sports movie, we see somebody at their lowest trying to achieve their highest.
Yeah.
But in this...
Nope.
We've got Mark Schultz, who is a current Olympic champion, who is at his lowest, trying to raise himself up, even though he's already been at his height.
Icarus.
Oh, interesting.
Icarus flies every... You know, talk about story types. This is Icarus. This is going too close to the sun. The intense heat melts the wax from your feathered wings, and your fake feathered wings, and you fall down to earth.
Dave eventually goes to work at Foxcatcher because he clearly sees that Mark needs support and saving within reason. Mm-hmm.
He's his guardian angel, really. You know, he's really like the best brother you can have, really. Coach, carer.
Super duper.
You know, he's the closest thing Mark really has to a friend. You know, yeah, it's just...
Although, interestingly, we did some in the research to this, we said that Tatum and Ruffalo spent 6 months training together in wrestling to make the wrestling scenes look good. Madness. And in that scene where, I would say, Mark's at his lowest at the Olympic trials, and his brother walks in and he slaps him in the face twice, that slap was real.
Wow.
No fakes. Completely real. And apparently Tatum said to Ruffalo before the take, he said, look, lay it in, make it real, let's just get it over and done with. And he did, and he hit him twice, and he burst Tatum's eardrum.
Jesus. Fuck, you know.
And you got to think that these guys, they trained together for all that time, so they do have a closeness. They did work together really nicely in the movie, and they did all that really good stuff. So you can see that growth, that closeness throughout the whole movie is there. And there's a certain amount of sibling rivalry, which is natural.
Maybe you don't really appreciate it fully unless you like dive into like the research and stuff of how close actors can really get to each other. And then maybe you see them at the Oscars every once a year or whatever. Like being at someone must be like university with someone for a year.
How do you think that relationship could have worked better? I think that's a question I'm actually interested in between all three.
I'd say when you have an owner, the best owners we can see are the ones who meddle the least.
So if he'd been just hands off and just paid the money,
it would have been great. Showed up to
and just
fights.
Come in every now and then and been like, this is amazing, guys. You're doing such a great job. I'm so proud of you. Keep it going.
It's like, you don't want to be micromanaged. You don't want conflict of information. You need a clear direction. You just want coach to let the coach do his thing without any, you know, without any micromanagement around him.
Yeah, I love it. I think you're absolutely right.
I'd say this is a film of just sort of moments in the story. I think it just sort of takes you along. I don't think it's too complicated, really. It's not doesn't have montage. Doesn't really have many montages, and because it's in such
there is hardly
because
any
it's
montages.
In such a short time period of time. You know, I mean, really, it's only like two, maybe 3 years.
I think we do get one montage, and I think it's when Mark has to get down to wait for the second Olympic trial match, and he's like puking in the bath and in the bathroom. And then he's on the air bike and stuff. And I think that's the only time that we really get that. But that's the closest we get. And then the winning of that next match is the closest that we get to being what I would consider like a real sports movie journey, like experience. But the majority of it's a film about sports people.
Yeah,
I want to try and lift the mood a little bit on this episode because it's a tough one. And I wanted to talk about our newest section that we've been talking about quite a bit recently. And we've had some great successes. We even had some feedback on my Jerry Maguire sequelizer from the end of season one recently. That somebody was like, oh, I love it. It's a great idea. It was fantastic. So if you haven't listened to that sequelizer, go and find that that episode. And my hope is that we can continue to make fun and interesting sequelizers moving forwards. My sequelizer this week is actually a prequelizer.
James. There we go.
And I would like to have seen the young experiences and the risers of the Schultz brothers to the 1984 Olympics, and that being their crescendo moments at the end of that movie. How they trained each other, the things that they overcame, the challenges that they had, maybe the fact that the parents had broken up and that they kind of raised each other. The time at Oklahoma for Mark. And I would like to see that. I'd like to see that movie. I'd like to see the journey for them and how they achieved what they achieved. If it's to be believed that they were both incredibly violent in those Olympics where they injured other members of, you know, sure. the people that they wrestled against, then that would make quite a cool and interesting part of the story. Unfortunately, I don't think we can get a sequel out of this.
Yeah. It'd be a tough one. It'd be too dark to really bring a sequel out of, because like,
yeah, and it's real life.
I imagine Foxcatcher was completely dismantled and like
it yeah. So actually,
after the death, right?
Yeah. So interestingly, the estate was sold off to a developer who turned it into houses. Mm-hmm. And they're very expensive houses. It's like a gated sure. community. It's very, very nice. And it's all set in woodland and all mm-hmm. that sort of jazz. But yeah, the actual main mansion was demolished in 2013, so they couldn't even use it for the film.
Actual organization, Foxcatcher, like the wrestling team, I imagine that went yeah. as well. Done. Yeah, it's done.
Yeah, done completely. Cool. So
yeah, there's no.
I don't know if American wrestling has hit much of a peak after that. I think
no, it's very much. You know,
just Kurt Angle might have been the
yeah the last one, know, but even he ended up going to WWE, right? Because there's more money there.
I was thinking about this earlier. I was thinking about every team that you coach, in some ways, the coach of that team will tell that team that they're the underdog in some way.
We had that. Both, yeah, for sure. I can definitely atone, yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, whether you're the underdog because you don't get as much financial help as another team, even though you might have more talent, you know, they've got Americans, you don't have Americans. Right. Whether they've got scholarship athletes, you don't have scholarship athletes. But you could still have, I was thinking about this, like, we would tell you guys, hey, you know, you don't have all this stuff that these teams have, but you're special in your own, you know, you're special because you came to Loughborough, because sure. you came to this university. And I was thinking about that, and I was thinking, yeah, how do we motivate these people? How do we... And it's always like, you always tell them they're your underdog story, don't you?
Yeah, complacency, you know, is the worst. Is the biggest enemy you can have as,
and even the greatest champion. Winners, they will just constantly be saying, you know,
I mean, look at the Chiefs.
Your struggle is to continue to do sure. it.
But even like I think of like Mahomes' like speech after a Super Bowl, like all the adversity we came through, like people doubted us, like who doubted you? Like you're the best. You're a dynasty. You're currently the best. You're always number one in the power rankings. You're the best quarterback with the best head coach, and you've got the best defense. So, like, what can you possibly say about adversity? Like, people like to paint these narratives because you're much more popular when you're the try to paint yourself as the underdog. Ultimately, aren't you?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. And that's why we like that. That's why you're the champion for the day, right? Mm-hmm. You're a champion for a day, and everybody exactly. loves you for a day. But the reality is, as soon as that sets in, that they're all like, nah, now we want to see them fall again. You know, let's see them come down. And then, so my question for you next is this popcorn fun or is it more of an art house beauty?
It's not fun. I guess it's
definitely not fun.
I guess it's art house beauty, you know, it's a film that shows power struggle. That's sort of like the main thing, I think. It's like, you know, DuPont's whole thing is that, you know, he's been obsessed with wrestling from a young age, but he was never able to do it seriously. So this is kind of his way of essentially buying a medal, and he's using Mark to...
Well, he does buy a medal, doesn't he, later on in the film, when he gets to face the old guy. And
right,
you see that little point when he gets, when his like minder hands over an envelope sort of quite quietly.
Exactly. So this is his way, Mark is his way into getting into the Olympics and experiencing all that. All these photo shoots, like, in what way has Mark benefited from become a better wrestler from DuPont besides finance?
Freedom. Besides finance. Financial freedom, that's it. And having access to, I think the training facilities is not to be underestimated. Because you see when they're training at Wexler, the Wexler University, it's like dark and dingy and small.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they go along to the Foxcatcher and it's like, lights, oh, it's so much bigger, bright lights, the mats are bright, all those kinds of things. And I think Yeah, it's trying to sell a decent story, isn't
Yeah.
it?
Yeah, it's a power struggle, and ultimately the conflict is that DuPont is sort of getting control of Mark, but Mark still really only fights, can only really fight if Dave is there. That's when he's at his best, which is kind of why DuPont wants to buy Dave, but he kind of struggles. So there's this power struggle dynamic from all three of the characters that we see in this film, and ultimately ends badly, in a downfall.
Absolutely. And it seems like, it doesn't seem like, that they necessarily did. I wonder what they did at Foxcatcher, because he was there for 8 years. So
Yeah.
did he have lots of world champions and, American champions and stuff? But it doesn't seem like they necessarily produced not lots of Olympic
No,
champions in
no, no.
1992.
Maybe that was the
But,
frustration as well. It's like everyone's. I feel like people can who disagree with each other can get on when, as long as they're winning. It's when you're not winning where everyone starts hating each other.
So I think it's. I think I agree. It's not a house movie for me. There isn't much about it that's fun in the slightest. But what it is a great examination of what real coaching is and what fake coaching is. And John is fake coaching, like all the stuff where he's like trying to impress his mother by talking about techniques and all this sort of
Yeah.
stuff. And the reality of the real coaching is all the stuff that Dave does, like the arm around somebody, even if it's the tough love of like giving him a slap and
Yeah.
saying, "Look, sort this. I'm here. I'm with you. You're not going through this alone, and I'm gonna help you get there."
Yeah.
That's the real
So
reality of real
John
coaching.
uses a lot of buzzwords, which makes him sound like he knows a lot about wrestling. But what he hasn't actually got any experience to back it. Whereas Dave is probably as good as a wrestling coach as you can get in the US, at least at this time.
What's your TikTok moment for this movie, James?
My TikTok moment, there's not. It was hard to pick a TikTok moment. I've picked the hotel room scene after the trial fight.
Yeah, so right.
Yeah, I
And
mean,
then the
like, I
binge
think,
eating, yeah.
yeah, that was just complete meltdown, wasn't it? I mean, we just see Channing Tatum. He can't cope with the pressure. There's too much going on. And you might be able to tell me a bit of movie magic about that moment.
No.
I think,
I think he really did smash the mirror.
yeah, so this scene, with Channing Tatum smashing his head through the mirror, it's not like Leonardo DiCaprio in Django, where he did it by accident and had to improv through it. But it's similar because by smashing his head through the mirror, Channing Tatum really did like cut up his head quite nastily. And actually, he ended up going through the wall. Supposedly, there was a little metal stud that was like a couple inches from his head. That would have really done some damage if the but yeah, no, that was just him being, you could see from an acting point of view, being so locked in the moment and like just like doing putting everything into that wall. But I think that just sort of shows like how intense of a character Mark is.
I know it's a very personal question. You don't have to answer it.
Sure.
But have you ever had that experience of being kind of like he does that stuff where he's like hitting his own face early on in the movie. He's like pressing at his own bruises. And then this where he sort of smashes his own head into the mirror. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been so
I'm not.
self?
I've been frustrated on the sideline of a game, and it might be as far as it's like, fuck, just being angry or whatever. If me and the quarterback weren't like on the same page with something, but I've never nothing to myself. Nothing to
No.
myself. No, I can't. That's you have to go quite. That's a pretty dark place, I think. I haven't met anyone who does that either.
I think about my teens, and I had reactions like that at times where I would
Really?
slap myself clean in the face.
Serious?
I'd punch my own legs. Like, you're such a fucking idiot. Like, why have you fucked this up?
Well, I don't know. I had the makings of a varsity athlete, so I never really. And failure wasn't
I'm
part of
not
my
talking
book.
about in sport. I'm talking about like
Oh shit!
just
Right.
being a
Okay.
fuck up at home, like just doing something that shouldn't have done, and angering a parent or something like that. And it resonated with me.
I might have had some moments where I'm like punching a pillow, maybe punch a pillow a lot, something like that. But
So that really resonated with me because I was like, "Oh, I've been there. I've been there." And it's hard to. That's about trying to understand that it's, man, we're all going to make fucking mistakes, and it's okay to make mistakes. You know, it's not your fault.
I suppose the intensity as an Olympic athlete is that you get a chance every 4 years, and it's not every 4 years forever. You maybe get two or three shots. You know, you don't know how long it gets, and that's kind of all. Your whole purpose is valued at your ability to win gold medals. So you can kind of completely see that reaction almost seems rational. You can almost sympathize.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like extent. Why? Have you, and then the
that
eat,
kind of obsession.
Yeah, it's just all very self destroying. I said that I thought, like, for me, for TikTok, I could see a supercut of Mark Schultz being made into an edit about anger and failure, like cutting everything where he's hitting himself in the face in the mirror, where he's looking at it earlier, you know, everything where it's sort of all this sort of self, this pain based stuff. I thought that would be amazing. I was like, I could imagine seeing that rather than it being like a scene that's cut into a TikTok moment.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
If you can get to a dark moment like that in a movie, then you're going to make your piece of art is greater than anything you can imagine, because it's really hard to capture that. You know, it's not all just, you know, we need those dark moments. I read something recently that said the only way that something can look interesting is to have depth, and the only way it can have depth is to have darkness. I think that was the phrase.
Why do we fall, Master Bruce?
So we can learn to pick ourselves back up.
We learn to pick ourselves back up.
Yeah. Why do we fall down a well, Master Bruce? Because the boards on top of it were rotten, and Alfred should have replaced them 4 months ago.
I'm going to lose my job. Don't tell.
Don't tell your parents. I'm going to have them killed. James, there's always a really important part of all of our episodes, and that is to rate the movie. It's very hard to see this one as a champion, but the first question is always, did you enjoy it? And you don't have to say enjoy it because you were like, oh, amazing, this was great, and I got into the Rocky feelings and stuff. But how did you like it? Did you like watching it?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think that's the answer. It's like, I didn't make me feel happy, but there's nothing in there which I thought was, oh, that's ridiculous. Like, when we watched, like, All the Right Moves, I was like, oh, that's just stupid. Like, you know, it just, like, everything I saw was rational based upon the character's circumstances and who they were, what they were motivated by. It's just a tragedy. It's just a sad story. And, you know, the whole point of this film, you know, this film came out 2 years after DuPont died. And I guess there was a timing element to that. You know, it was once he died, it would have been on the news. And then people looked into the story and thought, okay, this is quite a significant piece of story that we can tell on the big screen. So,
So for me, I really enjoyed it too. And to be honest, this is a great point for us to say, you know, it didn't make a lot of money, James. It made $19.2 million.
So it lost money.
Yeah. It lost money. But it was nominated for 5 Academy Awards, including Best Actor nods for Ruffalo and Carell, which I think was well earned.
Which is interesting, isn't it? Because it's like, would you say they got that the right way around for nominations? Would you say Carell's the main actor, the main character?
Some people think he is the main character. Yeah,
I find that interesting because I saw that. I saw that as well. You know, it was Carell got main actor nomination and
Ruffalo
got supporting actor. But I felt like, gosh, I mean, I thought in my mind, and Mark, played by Channing Tatum, was the main character, but.
Interestingly, he didn't get any award nominations. I thought it was amazing.
I thought it was incredible because he too was someone completely different. I thought Mark Ruffalo was basically Mark Ruffalo in this, you know. But he had a completely different demeanor and his whole way he talked and whatever. Like, I thought it was more intense, and to do all those things, like, he had way more wrestling scenes and more damage to himself. There's a lot of commitment by Channing. I thought it might have gotten some recognition, but
yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. So I really enjoyed it too. James, what's your rating for this movie?
Somewhere between Journeyman and Flash in a Pan for me, really.
Really? That low?
I wouldn't say it's definitely not a contender for me. I don't know how many other wrestling films there are, but this was more of a story about, I guess, DuPont, really, and kind of how dark that whole thing was.
Yeah.
But there's a lot, I feel like everything that happens in this film is as a result of the circumstances they're in, and that there aren't a ton of universal themes that I can sort of latch onto. Like with other films, like, you know, I feel like when you watch Rocky, it's like anyone can sympathize with Rocky. Like, it's, those are very fundamental universal truths that I think are told in that film, in terms of being an underdog, being doubted upon, being afraid. But like, I feel like this is like, oh, this is like so different. It's hard to sort of put myself in the athlete's shoes a ton, because like the way the circumstances they're in sort of alienate me a bit. What about you?
I would give it a little bit higher. I would give it at least a journeyman. I would say that it's okay. It's almost mid-tier. Like a watch it once or twice, and you know, you'd be grateful that you've seen it.
I guess I'm just a sucker for like feeling good in a movie.
Maybe absolutely. I get that.
That could be the reason why. It's kind
Whereas
of like...
I, you know, we've talked about this before. I like a tragedy. I am into a tragedy movie. You know, my favorite movies of all times are, you know, are tragedies, and this fits into that within reason.
Sure.
You know, this is, I'm actually just looking at the poster for this, and on the poster it said, there are great American movies, and then there are great movies that take America as their very subject, from Greed and Citizen Kane to There Will Be Blood and The Social Network. Foxcatcher has that same soaring ambition, and it holds its own in that august company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think that's right. It does talk about, because there's quite a lot of that in the movie where they go to, I think they go to Gettysburg or somewhere like that, where he talks about the, you know, he wants to be that American leader of men. He wants to be a general. He wants to be the people that people follow. But he's not that. He can't achieve being that, because he's not that person.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, I thought it's excellent. I really appreciate it for what it is. And I'm glad that you watched it, because I think sometimes we need to have some lows before we can really appreciate the highs.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful, really, that you get to see some of these movies. And that's why we pick them. We don't pick them because they're all the best sports movies that we love. They're the sports movies that make us sometimes think and feel, and they're going to help us on our journey.
Oh, yeah. This is absolutely... I mean, remember, like, when we were picking Chariots of Fire, we wanted to put an Olympics-themed sports movie, and I think it was going to be either Chariots of Fire or this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, those are the two biggest Olympics movies we could find.
Yeah, within reason, yeah.
Within reason, you know. Cool, so runners. But Winter Olympics, you know, stuff. I think it was important to have done this film, and I might not watch it for a long time, but I'm glad I did. So yeah, thanks for that.
It's one to sometimes go, oh, I don't know.
You have to be in a mood.
Yeah, you have to be in a mood for it, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, for me, journeyman. For you, journeyman. Flash in the pan, sort of in that sort of region. Yeah.
I'll say journeyman, because it, you know, it did very well for what it wanted to do. I can see what the purpose of this film was, so I'll give it a journeyman.
Even if it wasn't a financial success, I agree.
Right.
But and that's it. That's our episode, James. That's what's coming towards the end of this episode.
That's it. Yeah.
And I'm grateful, but looking forwards, we're going to do something very different next week.
This is about as drastic, this could be as different as we could get from today.
Absolutely. And I think that's the reason why we've chosen the movies in this order.
I can't wait. Yeah.
Because next week, it's not just going to be comedic. It's not just going to be, you know, a change from the darkness of this to the bright lights of something very, very different. Next week, we're doing what is in essence a kids' movie about sports, right?
Well, that's right, Joe. We are diving into our first animated film.
Yes.
Potentially, maybe, the best animated sports movie of all time? Let us know. But Cars, baby.
Yeah.
Cars.
We're going to get another Paul Newman movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to be so good.
There's so many amazing voices in this next movie. And it's about something that we both really enjoy, which is motor racing. And it's going to take us on a little journey of self-discovery, understanding what's important, understanding that, you know, sometimes it's important to take in the views along the way of your journey. And it's not just all about racing from one, you know, track to another. sometimes you've got to take in the views along the way. And
with a small dive into perhaps the forgotten past of Route 66 Americana as well.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful film. I can't wait.
I am really excited for it. I think it'll be a lot easier to watch than this one. And it's going to be our first clean episode, so that you can let your children listen to it.
Yeah.
And we've got to
probably PG. Yeah.
So we're going to try and make that episode, I think, as close to an episode that kids can listen to as possible, and give them some cool little things that they can enjoy, as well as some cool things that we can enjoy as well.
Yeah. Exactly.
So yes, whilst the dark nights close in, and the you know, we get closer and closer to Halloween, the reality is we're going to end up being super squeaky clean.
It's been so long since I've watched that. I need to rewatch that.
Really excited for it. Great. But yeah, thanks so much, James. I really appreciate it. Have a great week.
Absolutely. Thank you as well. You too. Yeah.
There is, man. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.